Indoor museums in Southern California have been closed since March, prompting the institutions that are such a bedrock of LA's and Southern California's cultural life to find new ways to engage their community. And of course, at the same time, to deal with any revenue that would come from admissions that are not being collected now, and to stay in touch with donors who might be going through their own financial challenges during this year of the pandemic. We're very pleased to have representatives of three Southern California museums to join us, but we're not limited to that trio. I'd love to hear from you. If you represent a museum anywhere here in Southern California, I'd like you to share with us what the challenge has been like, the creative ways that you're attempting to provide your services despite the limitations of the pandemic. Please let us know. We're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. With me is the Wallace Annenberg Director of the L.A. County Museum of Art, LACMA, Southern California's largest museum, the CEO of LACMA, Michael Govan. Thank you so much, Mr. Govan, for joining us again on AirTalk. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Larry. Happy to be with you.
So share with us, because you've got simultaneously during this year of the pandemic, a huge demolition and construction project going on your campus. So what are some of the ways you're attempting to stay connected with L.A. County museum goers when they can't go to the museum?
Yes, it's been so difficult because our whole reason for being is to connect people with art. And, you know, given this incredible tragedy and so many friends actually who have suffered from it. But we did pivot immediately, and we've served more people online for our symposia and educational programs, whether it was racism as a public health issue or celebrating suffrage, than we had in our theater. So there has been some light. All of our teaching artists turned into making their lessons at home for video, and they're on YouTube in seven languages. And, you know, one of our biggest audiences is our K-12 students, teachers, and families. So we've started at the request from schools. I think we were serving at least 7,000 now with full courses online and Zooming into classrooms. So we're doing our very best given the extreme difficulty of this. The construction project's going fine, thank goodness. And now, you know, maybe people didn't care as much before, but this construction project is over $1 billion injected into the economy and 9,000 jobs. So it's more important than ever in terms of economic recovery.
Has this, in a sense, been a blessing because you've had to close the old campus for the rebuilding project to have this simultaneously with the pandemic, as terrible as this is, of course, that you're not taking a double hit because you'd have to be significantly closed anyway?
Well, we actually had organized, we have seven new shows ready to go. We were ready for more than 1 million people in the 100,000 square feet we have. So actually we have really suffered, as have all of our museums. And it's worth saying that we're the only big metropolitan museum that isn't open or hasn't been opened. Almost every other city, every other big museum. And we did a survey at the Association of Art Museum Directors of Museums, Art Museums, and over 2 million people have visited since May, June, when they started to reopen. And there's been but one case of COVID, in part because museums are probably among the very safest spaces, safer than retail. There's no touching. So we're very sad that we haven't been able to serve the public in what we think is a safe way. Obviously, now cases are raging, but we're hopeful that we can be open again soon to serve our public.
Bottom line, financially, how hard has this hit?
Terrible. I mean, you see headline after headline across the nation, big museums, small museums, the loss of revenue, the loss of just being in touch with your audience for philanthropic dollars. You're seeing it's a lot won't survive. I mean, the big ones will, but, you know, all of us are really suffering and just trying to hold everything together through this.
Do you have an accounting of
millions?
Do you have an accounting for LACMA of how much revenue it's lost through the closure?
Yeah. I mean, Not exactly, because we're not finished, but it's millions. It's many millions.
And because you're a county institution, what percentage of your budget comes from LA County versus admissions and independent fundraising and foundations and all that?
20% of what we spend every year comes from LA County, and that's true both in the construction project and overall expenditures on an annual basis.
So at least that stays consistent even in the crisis. But then how much is admissions? What percentage?
5 to 7% is that, but it's everything around it, including, your restaurants, your retail, your memberships, all the energy that comes into events, galas, fundraisers, the whole thing. It's huge, obviously, and we depend on it. I think actually emotionally, the deeper problem is just being not able to carry out your work that you're designed to. So we feel that loss of connection, I think, even more than we feel the loss of revenues, as hard as that is to deal with.
We're talking with the CEO and director of the Los Angeles County Museum of Art, Michael Govan. We're also going to be talking with the leaders of a couple of other museums, but we're not limited to these three institutions. I'd like to hear from you if you are in leadership, any museum here in Southern California, you'd like to share with those who support your work and our audience, of course, which is very high in support of museums and believes in the importance, centrality of them in the cultural life of our community. 866-893-KPCC. We'll be back in 90 seconds. All right, good to see we've added another museum director who is going to talk about her institution a little bit later, Corey Siegel of the Museum of Neon Art in Glendale. We'll talk with us about what her smaller institution is trying to do in this very difficult time. We were just talking with LACMA's CEO, Michael Govan. Also joining us on Air Talk is Annie Philbin, director of the Hammer Museum in Westwood, an art museum affiliated with UCLA. Ms. Philbin, thank you very much for joining us this morning. We appreciate it.
Happy to be here, Larry.
So describe for us how your institution is attempting to connect with the community despite not being able to have anyone come inside.
Well, as with LACMA, pivot seems to be the key word these days. We have pivoted to digital brilliantly. Our team has learned new skills and transferred their energies towards the digital realm, and it's been quite extraordinary. In the last 6 months, we presented about 160 programs digitally to over 30,000 people from 30 countries, which is far more than we could have shared our programs with than if they had come to our theater. So it has been a really positive thing. I mean, everything from art to science to politics, there's no subject that we actually don't cover in our public programs, because as part of UCLA, we consider whatever is the purview of UCLA is ours as well. So we've done a lot of programs on the Supreme Court, on criminal justice reform, on reimagining the museum, Black Lives Matter, and especially we get a lot of gratitude for our weekly mindful awareness session, where basically hundreds of people tune in from around the world every Thursday to have moments of reflection together. So it's been rich.
Yet, and were you able to get any PPP money from the government, or the fact you're affiliated with UCLA make that not possible?
No, we were. We were able to. We got $2.3 million, which basically saved us.
All right. And I'm wondering about the Made in L.A. biennial that you'd been hoping to be able to mount for people to come to the Hammer to see. What are your plans for that once we're through the pandemic?
Yeah, it's very sad. There are the biennial is a very important exhibition for the artists who are in it. There are 30 artists in this one. They're installed both at the Hammer and at the Huntington as well. It's been installed since June, and it's absolutely an extraordinary exhibition, but the galleries are empty and silent. And for artists, it's the visibility of Made in LA can really affect their careers and affect their livelihoods. So it's been very, very sad. We're just hoping that maybe mid-February, we can keep it up till the end of March. So we're just really hoping that we have an opportunity to open it up for them.
And your staff members, what's their status? Can they be kept on?
Very good news is we have managed to keep our entire staff, 100 plus people, and another 75 part-time, intact, paid, and secure. And that wasn't easy, but we had, first of all, we're free, so we don't depend on admission fees, which is helpful, the PPE, and then our board basically made the decision to postpone part of our capital project in order to keep the staff safe. So I'm extremely grateful and proud of this.
Yeah, understandably. Annie Philbin with us, director of the Hammer Museum in Westwood. Also joining us, John Echeveste, CEO of La Plaza de Cultura y Artes, which is dedicated to exhibitions on Mexican and Mexican-American arts, history, and culture here in Los Angeles. Mr. Echeveste, thank you very much for being with us. How have things changed for you in this pandemic year at your facility?
Well, thank you, Larry. Like the other museums, we've also made the transition to virtual platforms. So we've done that in a number of ways. One is we created a new program that we do three times a week called En Casa con La Plaza, and that streams on Zoom and Facebook, and then it's archived on YouTube. We have a cooking segment every Monday, and then Monday afternoon, Wednesday, and Friday nights, we explore a number of different topics related to our community. Some of the programs include entertainment, so we've had some great entertainers on. And we also have a happy hour program that we do twice a month that features celebrity guests. So we had Linda Ronstadt on last Friday night. So we'll continue to do that. And what that's taught us is that we can reach a much larger audience, a much more diverse audience geographically. We get viewers now from throughout Latin America. So programs that normally would have had a live audience of maybe 50, you know, now can reach up to 2,000 people, which is terrific. So that really extends our reach.
Well, and does this give you the idea, once we're through the pandemic, that you'd like La Plaza to continue to have that kind of outreach, particularly to Spanish-speaking countries, so that that becomes an expanded part of your mission?
Most definitely. That's our plan is, you know, we're anxious to get back to live programs. But at the same time that we do those live talks and other programs, we'll also be streaming them as well, too. So I think that was a good move. And that's one of the things that the pandemic, one of the benefits of the pandemic. And, you know, we've also created a program for children called En Familia con La Plaza, where we do little workshops. And that's held on Saturday afternoons. And we've also moved two of our exhibitions to a virtual platform with a Matterport system, which actually allows you to walk through the exhibits and look at them in a 360 degree and then to focus in on a particular piece of art or a particular object that's in that exhibit. So that's exciting. And we have two more exhibits yet that we'll be transferring to that system as well.
John, what's the financial state of La Plaza?
Well, you know, we're also a county museum. Of course, we're much smaller than our friends at LACMA. We're, you know, this will be our 10th year in 2021. We're located right across from Alvera Street. But it has had a significant hit to us. Like the Hammer, we don't charge admission, so we're not that dependent. But the hit to us is about going to be at least $500,000, you know, on a budget of $3.5 million is pretty significant.
Yeah.
A lot of our revenue came from rental fees. We host a lot of outdoor events in our space throughout the summer month, and those, of course, were all canceled.
So very challenging. John Echeveste is with us, of La Plaza, downtown Los Angeles. He's CEO of that museum. Michael Govan of LACMA, Annie Philbin of The Hammer joining us. And as we continue, we'll hear from the executive director of the Museum of Neon Art in Glendale, because one thing's for certain, whether you're a very large institution, heavily endowed, or whether you're a very small, even storefront museum, the hurt is big during this time of the pandemic. We're finding out how museums are shifting gears to be able to serve the people who love the exhibitions, come to the exhibitions that they typically do, and also to be able to pay the bills and take care of staff. We're at 866-893-KPECC. If you have a particular exhibition remotely that really did it for you, you thought was creative and terrific, you can also call and share that with us. 866-893-KPECC. Back in 1 minute. We're talking with leaders of Southern California museums about how they're adapting to be able to provide their educational and cultural services to Southern California, despite their doors being closed since the middle of March. We're at 866-893-KPECC. Corey Siegel is the executive director of the Museum of Neon Art in Glendale. Ms. Siegel, thank you very much for being with us. What sorts of programming have you been able to do, even if people can't come in and see the art?
Thank you for having me, Larry. Well, I think museums are institutions that hone our ability to look critically and appreciate the world around us. And we're really lucky as the Museum of Neon Art because our collection can expand beyond the realm of our business, our museum. We can go and look in the streets and see that art is all around us because all neon signs are bent by hand. So what we've been doing is providing free walking tours that people can download on our website at neonmona.org.
Great idea.
And we've also been giving socially distanced tours. Of course, we had to close those when the stay-at-home order went into effect, but we've been doing Zoom tours as well.
So that's on your website. People can download a neon walking tour and just set out in the evening on their own and have that guided tour on their smartphone.
Certainly, yeah. So it's just something you can download on our website and you can go during the day or during the night. And it's supposed to give a little bit of context to the neon signs because each one tells a really incredible story about businesses that have persevered, people on the margins that have found a way to shine light during dark times. So we want to just share as much light as we can during this time.
Sounds great. For those of us who grew up in Los Angeles, neon signs, you know, just a part of our years here in Southern California, from the Mobile Oil Pegasus neon sign of the galloping horse to shoe repair signs of the, you know, cobbler's hammer mallet coming down on the shoe sole. You name it. It's just a part of Southern California life. Corey Siegel of the Museum of Neon Art in Glendale. Before I let you go, financially, how are you doing?
Well, basically everything was ground to a halt on in March, and that was our full operating budget. We did rely on entrance fees and fees for people taking our bending classes and neon bus tours. So we've had to really reimagine our budget. We decided to keep all of our staff on and find ways to adapt, and our team has been able to cobble together about 50% of our normal operating budget, but it's all been a massive pivot. So right now we're actually trying to start up a outdoor museum, and we have a GoFundMe to support our sign garden. And it's been an adventure, but I think that we've really seen the community step up to help us during this time, too.
Thank you so much, Corey. I appreciate it. Corey Siegel, Executive Director, Museum of Neon Art in Glendale. Al-Kayed in Anaheim, you want to talk about a program where artists are able to curate and contribute their work?
Yeah, so I'm a contributing artist for the Museo in Anaheim. And I just want to say William Carmargo and Katie Farrell, who are curators and artists at the Museo, have been doing such a great job in creating these programs and creating little, you know, art kits for kids and sending them out with them during the pandemic to really hone in on their, you know, art skills while the pandemic's going on. There's no in-schooling art going on as well. We've also been able to contribute a lot to the mutual aid funds here in Orange County, such as funds with the People's Coalition and 714 Mutual Aid, and also have exhibitions outside. William Camargo has been able to have one of his exhibitions, Origins and Displacement, on large vinyl prints on the windows of the Museo. And we're currently trying to plan another one to put vinyl prints on the floor. That way we can get the community to come in and still look at the artwork, even though the pandemic is still raging on.
Al-Kayed, thank you so much for telling us about that. We appreciate it. Al-Kayed in Anaheim. Let me go back to John Echaveste at La Plaza in downtown Los Angeles. John, are you concerned that when you are able to open up again, that, you know, for some of those folks, it's going to be hard to get them back in the habit of coming?
Yeah, you know, we're all keeping an eye on that to see. I think, though, that there's a lot of interest in getting back to museums. You know, we have a lot of people who come in who just need a break, who need to come in and get their mind off everything else that's going in the world. Because we're downtown, we get a lot of city employees who come in. We also, 3 weeks before the shutdown, opened a new exhibit on the Afro-Latino experience in Los Angeles. So we think a lot of people will be interested in seeing that, given what's been happening. And also, the day of the lockdown, we had a reception scheduled for a new exhibit on Carlos Almaraz, one of our most renowned Chicano artists. So that, unfortunately, that reception didn't happen. But what we did that night was a live walkthrough of the exhibit with Carlos's wife, Elsa. So that exhibit has been seen live by, I think, a total of 10 or 12 people is all.
It's great, the Afro-Latino things. I think, you know, many people don't understand the very, you know, rich and longtime history of mixed race, mixed ethnicity Los Angeles, that's embedded in the whole history of this city.
It's a very important part of our Latino culture here in Los Angeles and our history. And the way we set that exhibit up is in the format of a home. So you walk through the various rooms of a home and see how people express their cultural identity through that, with both art and historical pieces. So we do have that available in a digital walkthrough that people can view on our YouTube page, with the curator explaining each of the items that's in there.
John, thank you for being with us. Appreciate it. John Echaveste of La Plaza de Cultura y Artes, downtown Los Angeles. Also, Michael Govan, thank you very much for being with us. Any thought when you might be able to open LACMA's doors?
We don't know, but we're working to educate and work closely with our health officials, because museums really are, they're between the online surveys that you have to fill out, the touchless experience, touchless ticketing. We've all pivoted to create a very safe environment. So I think a lot of it is about educating people. In fact, the surveys that have been done about people who have been in museums across the nation are that they feel safe. So we think we can contribute to the crisis we have at hand by offering, as John says, a place for people to reflect safely.
All right. Michael Govan of LACMA, Annie Philbin of the Hammer Museum in Westwood, thank you all for joining us. It's Air Talk on KPECC. Much more to come in our second hour.